Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
You're listening to the Game On podcast. You can join us nightly on 2FM, Monday to Friday from 7.
Game on.
Football.
Soccer next, where there can be no greater honour for a soccer player than to have played for your country at a FIFA World Cup. Nicky Butt did just that for England in the 2002 finals. It's probably fair to say, though, he will be remembered by most fans in this country for his 12-year spell in the first team squad at Manchester United, during which he won a Champions League, 6 Premier League medals, 3 FA Cups and made 387 appearances. Not bad at all. He was in Dublin today. The details of why you will discover in a couple of minutes' time. But first off, 24 hours on from newspaper reports in the UK, which suggested that he, Paul Scholes and Phil Neville would certainly be a part of Louis van Gaal's coaching staff at Old Trafford next season. Fact or fiction? How better to find out than to ask the man himself?
Obviously, that's brought to Van Gaal, the manager. He's away with bigger things on his mind than me. So I think it'd be unfair for me to be chasing people, asking what's going on. But I've had a chat with Ed Woodward, and he's basically said that is a job there for me for the rest of my life if I want at the club, which is nice. But in what capacity, we don't know yet. So I think we'll wait until after the World Cup, sit down and have a chat where we go from there. But I'd like a job that's, you know, meaningful and got a bit of a purpose. I don't just want to be at a club floating about doing nothing. I want a meaningful job, and we'll see what comes up after the World Cup. That's as much as I know, really.
When a club like United has been such a part of your life, is it conceivable to think about working anywhere else, or is it the club that you've always wanted to be a part of and will always want to be a part of?
Yeah, I'm a Manchester lad. I grew up supporting United all my life, and it's a club that I played for, obviously, and now I'm working with it. It's hard to distance yourself from it, but you can never say never. You know, there's a lot of good clubs out there that you're passionate about football. It doesn't really matter where you're working, but if you're at a club that you love and you've been all your life, it's a massive, massive bonus. Yeah,
there's no doubt United's a club in transition, and it was always going to be when a manager who'd been there as long as Sir Alex Ferguson departed. People talking about it being a club in turmoil, being a club in a bad state of affairs. Is there a level of hysteria now around United that's unnecessary?
Yeah, it's not necessary. I think a lot of players played under par last year. It was pretty weird, really, to have so many players not playing well. But if you look at the squad that we've got, I mean, Van Persie, Rooney, Mata, Januzaj, they're as good as most forwards in the country. And if they start firing next year, it's a different story. I think we've lost a few experienced players, and if the manager can bring in some experience, particularly in the back, maybe in midfield as well, will be a force we reckon with again next year.
And as well as that, we saw towards the latter stage of the season when Ryan Giggs was in charge that, you know, young guys came straight in from the reserves or from the underage level and were able to mix it with the first team. So there is maybe not quite a second class of 92, but there is a depth there at underage level that is capable of making the step up.
Yeah, there is some great young players at our club, and they need to get given a chance, and Ryan did. They give Wilson a chance, Tom Lawrence a chance, got a few more in the waiting as well, but particularly them two, the top draw players. Wilson will be a phenomenal player as well, and they need to get a chance. But it's difficult for young players coming in when the team's not doing well. It needs to be bedded in and blooded when the team's doing well.
Is it getting harder, though, for managers to take a punt on younger players because the stakes at a club like United is just so high that you can understand why the big clubs just go out and buy established players?
Yeah, I think nowadays, obviously, a lot of the owners now want instant success. Some of the owners see it's like a little toy for them to come in. They've got that much money, they come and buy a club, and it's a bit of fun for them, for the friends, a bit of a toy. And they're not going to speak to a manager and say, give me 10 years, I'll get you 8-9 young players through. They're going to say, well, I want to win the league within 3 years. And it's difficult to blood players for managers.
But then you look at clubs like, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, United, City. Have they lost a sense of what their identity is to the cities that they're a part of?
They have, in a sense. They're not playing young players as much. Yeah, I think City, I can't think of any players that come through the rank there. Chelsea, probably one or two with John Terry coming through. Liverpool have got one or two, to be fair to him. Man United, I've got one or two again, but they need to keep coming through and keep on the conveyor belt and keep bringing them through. And that's what stopped over the last few years at them clubs you mentioned there. So it affects national teams. It affects the likelihood of a fan feeling like they know the players because they've watched them as a youth team player. They've watched them at 16, 17. You think you know them. You think it becomes like a nice thing for fans to have young players coming through, and it's important not to lose that.
Would you expect United to bounce back next season, or do fans need to be patient and you know, let a new manager come in with new players and bed in for 12 months?
I think with the appointment that the club have made with Van Gaal, I think they want success straight away. He's a proven winner. He's had success wherever he's been. He's been at some massive European clubs. And I think with that appointment, that's a statement saying we need to kick on straight away. We haven't got time to wait about We need to sign some players and we need to get back on the winning curve straight away.
Do you feel for David Moyes?
I do, yeah. I think he came in at a time when he wanted to have a massive upheaval, a massive change. He wanted to change a lot of things in the club and he didn't have the time to do that. So, yeah, I think I do feel sorry for him in that sense. Quite a bit of bad luck, where I said before, where a lot of the top players didn't perform. Van Persie had a lot of injuries. He was our best player the year before.
Mm.
So, yeah, he had a bad luck with injuries, had a bad luck with form, players on form. And you very rarely, or not that I can remember that, I can't remember really that so many players playing so bad.
Before we talk about England, just a final question on that then. Like, in a way, from how you're talking, Moyes has effectively become the scapegoat for the players having let him down. Is that a fair representation?
No, I wouldn't say scapegoat. I think as a team together, I think I can't imagine a player going out on a pitch wanting to play bad, because you've got your own pride. It's you who gets marked at the end of the day. It's you who gets told you're playing bad. It's you who gets sick when you go out into the cities with your family, your wife, whatever, and a drink, and a bite to eat. It's you who's getting attacked for the ridicule for playing bad. So I can't imagine a player going out doing bad that way. I think there's a team. The manager takes the praise when they do well. The manager takes the plummet when he's doing bad, and that's just the way football is.
How do you feel about England's World Cup chances? What's your expectation of how they'll succeed?
I think they'll get through the group stage. How far they'll get after that, I don't know. It depends who they draw. I think they've got some great young players who are very pacey. They've got a lot to prove. And I think it's refreshing for the English game, because I think years gone by in tournaments, players going to tournaments expecting to play, knowing they're going to play, knowing what number they're going to play, missing a few training sessions here and there, missing a few practice games here and there because they know they're going to play. Whereas now, everybody apart from maybe Gerrard, Hart, will fighting for the place. No, no one's sure of the place. Maybe more so now, but at the start of the build-up, there weren't so many. There were only probably two or three players that were sure of the place, and that's refreshing because everyone wants to prove how good they are.
The sense of expectation, reading the English media and listening to, you know, English phone-in shows and whatever else, it doesn't seem to be at the level that it has been in previous tournaments, which must be a good thing for the players involved.
Yeah, it's a massive thing because every tournament we hear, I'll pressure on England to do well, and we've got no given right to do well. We've not won anything since 1966, so fooling ourselves to think that we can go and win tournaments all the time, and it's a nice, refreshing state of change.
Would you have spoken about that as a group when you were involved, or is it something that you give any consideration to when you're within the bubble?
No, you get into a bubble and like you say, you're away for, well, been away for 3 weeks now, and you get told just try and put that one side, don't read newspapers, keep yourself, keep like the siege mentality that you're in here now, and we know what we're good at and we've got to stick to that, and that's the mentality you give in training camps before tournaments.
Overall, how wide open a tournament do you see it being?
I think the winning's going to come from either Argentina or Brazil, and I think it'll be Argentina. I think it's not that wide open. I think it's difficult for European teams to go to South America to play with the altitude, and you know, different parts of the country can be different temperatures. It's a difficult competition at the best of times, but in the conditions they're going to have now with the altitude and different, it's a massive country, not to travel in and stuff, so I can only see a South American team winning it.
Do you have any concerns about the, you know, like, it's surprising, here we are 2 days out from a World Cup starting, but yet there's more focus on the Qatar World Cup than there is on the Brazilian World Cup, and which is surprising when you consider that the Maracana looks far from finished for the opening game, and there's so many problems around the place. Like, it's very hard to be a supporter of FIFA or justify what FIFA are doing at the minute.
It is, yeah. I think you're dead right there. I think if it was the English World Cup, I think they took it off us probably 3 months ago and said, you're not ready for it. I can't see how. I mean, Brazil, hopefully they'll get it right, but I mean, the build-up to it's not been great. If any stretch of imagination, the stadiums haven't been ready, training grounds haven't been ready, the transportation system's down, and then you go into Qatar where it's going to be 46 degrees. It's mind-blowing how they get it, really.
But again, is that something, as a player, you're in the bubble, you go from hotel to bus to training centre to stadium?
As a player, you can't really comment on it. You've got to get on with it. You can't look for excuses. You can't look for anything political. You can't really say too much out of the ordinary because you're there for an hiding, and as a player, you just get on with it and you just play football.
Just, can I ask you a final question? You're probably, of the class of 92, not to keep going back to that group, you're probably one of the ones that has the lowest profile. You don't seem to do an awful lot of media. You don't get yourself out there as much as the others. It seems to have been a bit of a backlash in the papers over the last couple of months that, in a way, some of the players are trying to rewrite their position within United's history, or, you know, been dubbed the class of 92 and whatever else. That must be immensely hurtful.
That's not hurtful. I mean, This class of 92 thing is...
Has it grown into something much bigger than any of you would really be comfortable with, or that you'd be comfortable with?
We never started it, so it's not like it's just something that just got named. You know, we were just a group of lads that went into United obviously in 92, and then it got dubbed that, and it's gone on that in the papers, and before you know it, it's become this big monster that everyone probably getting fed up of, if we're honest. You know, It was nice to do the documentary and stuff to show our family and kids, but the thing that things always get put in the paper, and it's not something we're pushing. It's just something that we've got to deal with.
But it gets to ludicrous situations when, you know, people are talking about Paul Scholes doing Sky work as an attempt to get David Moyes out of the United job and stuff like that. That's insane.
Yeah, but things like that, when you're in a club like Man United, you end up being a player like Paul Scholes, and the player he's been, and the name he is, things are going to say things. Paul Scholes never only really did Sky to help Gary Neville out, because his mate, and he enjoyed doing it. He said a few things that the way Scholes is, he says how he thinks, and next minute he's trying to get a manager out of a job. That's definitely not true. He just said what he thought, and said what maybe a lot of people were thinking at the time.
Appreciate your time.
Cheers, thanks a lot. Game over.